Let me take this opportunity to welcome all the members, welcome the Department of Labor. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Honorable Makwe for chairing the previous Select Committee meeting. We went to Free State in 2 weeks. So I would like to thank you very much. In terms of our agenda, the members, we have the apologies, briefing by the Department of Labor on the reviewed strategic plan and annual performance plan. We then have a consideration and adoption of minutes. And then there will be announcements if there is. So that is how we proceed with the agenda. We start now with the introduction. My name is Manja Khai, a member of the National Council of Provinces, representing the Eastern Cape, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development.
My name is Edwin Mapu.
My name is Timonya George in Pumalanga.
My name is Makusin Shaban. I come from the state.
Today I represent the Northern Cape and my name is Willem Faber.
Wosui Maguel from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Shaban. I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will just introduce my team, but ask them to introduce themselves so that you can hear their voice. My name is Sefer Dova, acting DG of the department. My responsibility is acting as an employee.
My name is Lolo Kolo Sigaba. I'm the Chief Director for Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation of the Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Hilda Mshongo, Acting Commissioner UIF.
Good morning. My name is Vicky Somnyana. I'm the Chief Director of Sector and Advocacy Services in IUF.
Good morning. My name is Mandy Samachima. I'm the Chief Director of Human Resource Management at the Department of Labor. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Peggy Matuna, the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Mawele Ndama. I'm the Acting Chief Director for Provincial Operations in the Western Cape.
Thank you. My name is Msugi Sindaka. I'm head of the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Can we ask the parliamentary staff to introduce themselves?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and Deputy Minister of Labour and officials from the department. My name is Thabo Molusi. I'm from the NCOP in the Office of Honorable Dikgale. Thank you.
My name is Lutu Matsushu. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Morning, I think I'm in the wrong order here, but my name is Greg Schneeman. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Minister of Labour.
morning. I'm not steward in the role of the committee secretary.
BMG.
Good morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain, BMG.
Thank you very much. We have four apologies, or three. There's one from the Minister of Labour. There's also one for the Honourable Ntebe, who's a member of the Select Committee, as well as the DG. The Minister and the DG are out of the country. As we first all know, that there's an ILO conference in Geneva, that if things were going according, we're supposed to be having a delegation from this committee. I'm told that the letter went to the office of the chairperson, but it has not yet been processed. So the minister and the DG have attended that particular conference. Yeah, thank you very much. At this stage, we'll allow give us an overview, and also Sam Rutova then will take us through the APP. But I just want to also, my surname is R-A-Y-I. It's pronounced Hai. Moratova, don't call because you've got all Arabic names in your name. You might thought that I'm also Rai. You might think that I'm also I'm Chai. You've never also got R in my name. Thank you.
Chairperson, one of the members of the Select Committee. Good morning. My name is Patekile Olumisa. So everybody was introducing themselves. the Deputy Minister of Labour, as we have had the Minister, the one was supposed to have been here, but unfortunately she has had to attend the International Labour Conference together with the Director General and also some of the senior officials like Mwilwa and Matelesi. For IES and cooperatives, we have had to attend. But as we have had, as we introduce ourselves, we are still a delegation of senior officials who know all the answers that we need from the department. The acting minister currently is Ms. Shabangu. Of course, she prefers that I do as delegated by the minister and come and this delegation. I also wanted to ask for leave as soon after I've made my introductory remarks because the National Assembly is sitting as we speak and it's a three-line tweet because there are certain decisions that need to be taken. I hope the committee will understand. The strategic plan and the annual performance plan 2017-2018 really do not from the government's five-year medium-term strategic framework. And the review of the strategic plan and the annual performance plan was necessitated, among others, by the recent developments and changes that are taking place within the labor market policy space, the high levels of employment insecurity and uncertainty amongst workers on their future, the increase in levels of unemployment, increase in demand for Department of Labor Services. So the rises in levels of unemployment result in more demand for the services of the Department of Labor. The growing uncertainty regarding the future that has impacted upon the forced digital industrial revolution. The constitutional imperatives and obligations that we have as the Department of Labor. The paradigm shift in how we measure our performance and impact in the labor market, the need to address previous findings by the Auditor General, and the current resources constraints that we are experiencing as a department and as government in general. The reviewed Department of Labor strategic plan and annual performance plan also seek to accelerate the department's contribution to socio-economic development and the reintegration of previously marginalized communities in our society. The reviewed strategic plan and annual performance plan took into consideration the increase in demand of the services of the Department of Labor by members of the public, the need to improve service delivery and operational efficiency within the current fiscal constraints that has resulted in the department receiving less financial resources allocation than initially anticipated. In other words, we have planned to do much more with less as a department, and at the same time, to be more realistic on what we can deliver. The Department of Labor has thus effected a number of changes in our planning process for the next year to come. We have in the reviewed strategic plan and annual performance plan reduced our key priorities and areas of focus. We have refined and sharpened our strategic projects. We seek to derive maximum impact within the current resources constraints. We have consolidated some indicators in order to reduce them to a manageable number. We have reviewed targets based on historical achievements and trends and adjusted them accordingly after discussion with both treasurers and the Auditor General. We have relegated other indicators that we consider to be operational to the individual branch work plan so that we can continue to fulfill our legislative obligations. We have also done our best to provide targets per province, especially in the two main core functions of inspection and enforcement services, as well as public employment services. So at this point, Chairperson, if you allow me, I want to hand over to the acting DDG, acting DG, to make the presentation to the Honourable Member.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kazi. I'm going to use the circulated copies, Honourable Chairperson and members. For you to follow me, I will always refer to the slide numbers, because the glare of the projector was becoming problematic. On slide 2, it just outlines the content of the presentation, the focus on the adult program, secondly, the focus in the midterm strategic, that is the midterm strategic framework. Three will focus on the strategic plan, and then the three that is supposed to be four will be the annual performance plan, and then we'll touch on the medium strategic framework. And apologies that the numbers went astray. On page 3, or slide 3, it gives you the breakdown in terms of the entities of the department. And for the purpose of today, we'll cover mainly 1 to 4, because this appears in the document that we tabled in Parliament. The Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund table their own APPs and strategic plan separately, and will not deal with those today. On slide 4, we also provide the entities that are established in terms of the Department of Labor legislation that we are responsible for. And these are extensions of the department that assist us to achieve mainly the objectives that are in our APP through the transfers that we make. The first one is the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration. Secondly, the National Economic Development and Labor Council, Productivity South Africa, and Supported Employment Enterprises. Now, all these bodies, the CCMA, NEDLEC, Productivity and Supported Employment Enterprises, also do have a footprint in the various provinces. and some of them operate within the Department of Labor space where we don't have labor centers, just to ensure that we save on the rental purposes. The Department of Labor, like all other government departments, forms part of clusters of Director General's cabinet committees, and we are responsible for a number of outcomes. You may all be aware that in total we have 14, and each government department has to indicate how the work that we are doing is contributing to specific outcomes. Now, in our case, we contribute to outcome 4, which has to do with decent employment through inclusive economic growth, outcome 5, on a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path, outcome 11, which is about creating a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world, outcome 12, on an efficient, effective, and developmental-oriented public service, outcome 13, on inclusive and responsive social protection system, and outcome 14 on transforming society and uniting the country. So all our work should be seen within that context. On slide 6, we just give you a breakdown in terms of a specific outcome in the first table, the goal statement that we pursue, and the last column gives you an indication of the branch responsible. So employment, that is inspection and enforcement services, labor policy and industrialization, and PEST for public employment services. So I'll be using these acronyms regularly. So outcome 4, mainly the three branches contribute to that. Outcome 5 is mainly PEST. Outcome 11 is mainly labor policy and industrialization. Outcome 12 on slide 7 is administration, and outcome 13, unemployment insurance fund and compensation fund, and outcome 14 is the inspection and enforcement services and labor policy and industrialization. And in the APPs of the CCMA NEDLAG, Productivity South Africa and Supported Employment Enterprises, you'll also find that they do that link, because that's how the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, DPME, has ensured that we have an alignment. Now on slide 8, we're just providing you with a sense in terms of the footprint of the department and where we operate. We have two headquarters, or three headquarters, that are based in Gauteng. It's mainly the Department of Labor head office and the two funds, the UIF and the compensation fund. That's where the bulk of our staff are located. And then we also have 9 Department of Labor provincial offices that are headed by chief directors, and Mr. Dabo is here for the Western Cape. Now, honorable members, if I can also just give you an indication, we have 126 labor centers. Now, the breakdown is as follows. In Limpopo, we have 13 offices. Sorry that we didn't put that, but you can write that on the slide. In the Northwest, we have 10 offices. In Gauteng, we have 26 labor centers plus 4 satellite offices. In Mpumalanga, we have 15 labor centers and 26 satellite, so 15 labor centers and 26 satellite offices. In the Free State, we have 11 offices and 3 satellite offices. In the Northern Cape, we have 7 labor centers. In the Western Cape, we have 12 labor centers and 7 satellite offices. In the Eastern Cape, we have 16 labor centers and 13 satellite offices. And in KwaZulu-Natal, we have 16 labor centers. So in total, we have 126 labor centers. Now, over and above that, honorable members, we have visiting points. Now, visiting points will normally be in the various municipalities, in the TUSO centers that exist in the country. Now, we use the cars that we have bought for our staff to visit those offices once a week. That is in the most rural areas where we don't have offices, to ensure that we service members of the public in those offices using the trucks. We also have buses that have computers, and we are planning on also expanding this, fitted with satellites that also visit the various areas. Now on slide 9,
are you able to tell a breakdown of the 19 mobile units?
The mobile units are normally located in the various provinces.
I'm saying for each province.
For each province.
But if you don't have that detail now, fine.
Yes, I don't have it at the moment. But we'll check that.
It would have been answered if we had been writing. But also the bus itself, the way it is located, the head office, where exactly it is from. I understand that the thing is expanding. We're hopeful that this state province will have its own. Okay, you can put it.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. And the two buses, one services the coastal region, which is the Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal, and is normally located in the Western Cape. And the other one services the interior provinces, Limpopo, Northwest, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Free State. Normally when we have big national events, May days, especially the youth month, where the president, deputy president, minister, deputy minister, and so on visit. So that's how we normally use them. And they are plugging a lot of kilometers because of the events that take place in the various provinces. Hence, the whole question of the expansion. Now, on slide 9, we have the main branches that form the core of the strategic plan and the APP that I'm going to present: administration, inspection, public employment services, and labor policy and industrial relations. Now, the administration mainly provide strategic management and support services to the department. This is where the ministry, deputy minister's office, the director general, the chief operations officer, and the corporate services reside. Now, the objective statement is about leveraging the MPET to improve the management practice of the department, thus improving strategic management and support to the department. And normally, when we do the threat plan, they want us to put the baseline, and the baseline normally refers to the previous year as achievement. And we put the baseline as 37% of total department's MPET standards, the KPI, are at level 3 and level 4, as much. And this was what we had in the previous year. And the justification would be that the management assessment tool, MPET, is a tool that collates existing management policy. This is a tool that we report to in terms of MPET to the DPME. And in terms of links, in all of them, you will notice that this links with outcome 12 and is part of our five-year target to 2020. The second one on administration on slide 9, is that the departmental interventions and initiatives are communicated, and this is mainly in terms of the objective statement to disseminate and improve access to information. And again, we repeat the same information in terms of baseline justification and links to the outcome. If I can go to slide 12, again on administration, objective 3 has to do with effective financial management and governance. And the objective statement has to do with the compilation and submission of the interim and annual financial statements to the National Treasury and Auditor General, as well as the publication of the annual financial statement in the annual report. And again, we give you the baseline, the justification, the link, and the target. The fourth one in terms of administration has to do with effective supply chain management, which the objective statement is about enhancing supply chain management processes and systems to be in line with the regulatory framework and governance best practices. And again, we'll give you the baseline, the justification, the link, and the five-year target of 100% detected cases reported. On slide number 14, we then move to the second branch, which is inspection and enforcement services. Now, the strategic objective in the strategic plan is that workers protected through inspection and enforcement of employment law. And the objective statement is to ensure decent work principles are adhered to by protecting workers through the inspection and enforcement of employment law. And historically, the baseline for 1516 was 187,000 inspections. And in terms of compliance, the historical information was at 98%. And the incidences that were investigated, the baseline for the 1516 was 82%. So normally when we craft going forward, we'd normally look at what we achieved in the previous year. But then the challenge, like the DM, the Deputy Minister said, was that when the resources were cut down, we had to also review the numbers. So it is in that context that honorable members must understand that even though we may have achieved X, when we go to the APP, there is that understanding that we had to sit with both National Treasury after the cuts were effected to say this is what we are going to do. In inspection and enforcement, they just have that one objective for the five-year period. The next program, Public Employment Services, has four. The first one is that work seekers are registered, and the objective statement is to make sure that we register work seekers on the employment system of South Africa, so that we can have at least a sense of the work seekers that we have across the country. Now the baseline for the 15-16 was at 684,000, and you have the justification why do you do this, to enable workers to access employment opportunities, and this links to outcome 4 and 5, and the stretch plan gives you also the 5-year target. The second one on PEF is around work and learning opportunities registered, and the objective of the statement is to register the registration of opportunities on EFSA. These are opportunities that come from various employers that we then match registered work seekers against. And the baseline was 102,000, and you have the justification statement, the link to outcome form, and the 5-year target. Objective 3, the employment counseling provided. Now, the objective statement is to provide employment counseling, and we had a baseline of 208,000 in the previous year, and we have a justification statement. Slide 18 talks to work seekers that are registered, that are counseled, are then placed in work and learning opportunities. Now, normally, this process has to do with making sure that the registered work seekers are matched against opportunities, they are counseled, and obviously, although the counseling numbers are high and the referrals are high, ultimately, the AG takes the report on the total number of people that are placed where employers confirm, and that is why the number there in the previous year was at 10,000. On labor policy and industrial relations, the objective statement is to ensure that employment equity in the labor market is ensured and enforcement improved, on slide 19. Now, the objective statement is to establish a legislative framework to promote employment equity, and the baseline is based on what they did in the previous year, the workshops to amend the code of practice on persons with disabilities, the annual employment equity report, and the employment equity register, and you then have the justification linked to outcomes and 5-year targets. The second objective on the labor policy and industrial relations has to do with establish basic standards and minimum wages, and the objective statement has to do with setting standards to reduce inequality in pay and minimum wages for all vulnerable workers. And we have the baseline, the justification, and the 5-year target. The third objective on the LPNI side is to advance national priorities through bilateral relations. So the work that we do in relation to all other international bodies, starting from the African, from the SADC, the AU, the ILO, has to do with the promotion of national interest through all those bilateral and multilateral cooperation agreements. And we have the baseline in terms of the reports that we submit to the ILO, especially on the international conventions that we ratified, and also you have the justification and the target. The fourth one has to do on page 22, promoting sound labor relations. And there the objective statement is to promote sound labor relations and centralized collective bargaining. And you have a baseline in terms of the previous year 20 collective bargaining agreements that were extended and 147 applications have been considered. And you have a justification statement linked to outcomes and capacity and targets. The fifth one has to do with monitoring the impact of our labor legislation, and the objective statement has to do with promoting sound policy framework through research and labor market information analysis. And again, you have the baseline justification. So this is what we did in refining our indicators in the strategic plan. And that is the 20 strategic plan of the department 2015 to 2020, and aligned it with the medium-term strategic framework. And as honorable members may be aware that the strategic plan just gives the broad strategic thrust. The detail is now provided in the annual performance plan, which is aligned to the 3-year budget allocation that we normally receive from the Treasury in terms of the projections. Now, in the annual performance plan, that is where we give you the indicator, the full target for the year, and the breakdown in terms of our target per quarter, so that you can then monitor our performance and check whether we are progressing and corrective measures are effected in case something is not happening. Now, again, I'm going to repeat the same process, but this time on the annual performance plan of the...
Can I ask you not to focus on the annual target, not the quarter.
The quarter.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if we go to slide number 25, you'll notice that on administration percentage of total department MPES standards at level 3, the target is 40% of the total department MPES standards per KPI at level 3 are achieved by March 2018. On slide 26, on communication, the target is that 100% of our communication annual plan is implemented in the annual action plan. Slide number 27, on the number of annual financial statements and interim financial statements compiled, the target is that the annual financial statement by May 31st are normally given to the Auditor General, and that 3 financial statements 30 days after each quarter are produced. On the percentage reporting of detected irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the target is 100%. On inspection and enforcement, on slide 28, the indicator is the number of employers inspected per year to determine compliance with employment law. And the target for 2017-18 is 217,008 inspections. And we have a breakdown per quarter, but again, especially in the two programs, you then have the provincial breakdown, which again tallies with the target. From the Eastern Cape, the Free State, the Western Cape, and head office level, in total they come to 207. On slide 217,000. on slide 29, you then have a breakdown of inspections in terms of Employment Equity Act, and again, we have the annual target of 1,800, and if the target is distributed per province, and there are quarterly targets that each province must achieve. On slide number 30, we have a breakdown of inspections in terms of employment equity on the procedural compliance of a total of 5,592, and we also give you an indication of the breakdown per province. And at provincial level, honourable members, I'm sure the understanding when I talked about the labour centre is that they also have a further breakdown of this target to the individual labour centres, so that each province can then be able to coordinate its work. On slide 31, in terms of basic conditions of employment compliance, we have a total of 158,432, and again, give you a sense in terms of the provincial breakdown. On slide number 32 is inspections for occupational health and safety, 23,328, and we also have a breakdown per province. On slide 33, we have compliance in terms of Unemployment Insurance Fund Act, where the inspectors do employer audit to check procedural compliance. In total, we have 16,860 as a target, and you also have provincial breakdown. On slide 34, we have UIF insurance contributions, that is employer compliance in terms of the UIF Contributor Act. We target to inspect 984,000, and you have a provincial breakdown. And in terms of on slide 35, the percentage of non-compliant employers of those inspectors served with notices in terms of relevant labor legislation within 14 calendar days, we have a target of 80%. On percentage of non-compliant employers who fail to comply with the serve notice referred for prosecution within 30 calendar days, we have 60% as the target. And in terms of percentage of reported incidents investigated and finalized within the prescribed time frame, we've set ourselves a target of 65%. On slide number 36, Public Employment Services, the number of work workers registered on ESA per year, the target was revised downwards from 600,000 to 500,000, and that has to do also with the issues that the Deputy Minister raised around the budget adjustment. Now, the target for the year is 500,000, and the breakdown per province in terms of what they are supposed to register is also provided. On slide number 37, on the number of work seekers and learning opportunities registered on EFSA, the target is 60,000, and the breakdown in terms of provinces is also provided. On slide number 38, on the number of registered work seekers provided with employment counseling, this includes the recruitment, selection, assessment of work seekers, screening and final referral to employers. The target is 140,000, and this work is done by mainly professional career counselors who are psychologists. And the breakdown, again, per province is provided. In terms of the number of registered work seekers, that is the number of registered work and learning opportunities filled by registered work seekers per year, that is the placement. The target was reduced to 8,000, from during the previous year was 10,000. And this again has to do with the adjustments on the budget and treasury and AG accepted the figure. And you then have the provincial breakdown. And that the adjustment was also, amongst others, affected due to the other issues that the Deputy Minister raised around the economy, state and so on. On labor policy, on the number of policy instruments developed, on slide 14, the target is that the annual employment equity report for 2016-17 is published by 30th of June 2017. And the minister has already done it. And on slide 41, on the establishment of institution of the national minimum wage by the 31st of March each year, the target is to ensure that an institution of the national minimum wage is set up by March 28th. And the quarterly target gives you a sense in terms of the preparatory work that will have to be done to make sure that by the 31st of March we have that institution up and running to implement the agreements that were reached at NEDLEC, and I'm sure we'll be coming to yourselves, honorable members, on the adjustments that are going to effect of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and a completely new act that will make it possible for us to have the national minimum wage. On slide 42, on the report submitted to the Minister on the implementation of multilateral obligations, the target is to have two reports submitted by 31st of March. On slide 43, on the percentage of collective agreements extended, and our target is to make sure that all of them, 100%, are extended within 90 days after we receive them. On slide 44, on the percentage of labor organization applications for registrations approved, our target is to have all 100% of all applications approved within 90 calendar days. On moderating workplace conflict for three, our target is to promulgate amendments to the labor legislation by March 2018. And lastly, on the number of labor market trends reports produced annually, our target is to ensure that four annual labor trends reports are produced by March 2018. And on the number of literature review reports for labor market research produced and signed by the DDG, our target is to have four of such review reports signed off by 31st of March 2018. And the next slide gives you a summary of our budget allocation. And honorable members can see, starting from the 2013-14, the 14-15 allocation of the department. And what has happened in the 2016-17 adjustments that we had. This department moved from a total allocation of 2.3 billion in 2013-14 to 2.8 billion in the 2016-17 financial year. And this year we moved to 3 billion and 3.2 in the next year, 18-19, and 3.4. Now, the budget must be seen in the context of a number of things, inflation and a whole range of others. So in actual fact, where we had planned and where we anticipated an increase, for instance, in the number of inspectors and so on, the budget allocation mainly was to cover the increase in the compensation of employees, and in some cases where the budget was not enough and where we had vacancies, we had to abolish them so that we were able to remain within the allocation. And in the slide number 48, we then give you the budget allocation to provinces. So what happens is that apart from the budget that is allocated to the province, to the programs, we do effect transfers to entities like the CPMA, Productivity SA, etc. And the bulk of our budget then goes to the provinces. And in slide number 48, you then get a sense in terms of how we distribute our budget, Gauteng receives the biggest slice, followed by KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, and then the rest of the provinces then follow in that order. Now, Honorable Chairperson, I believe that it may have been rushed, but I tried to do my best to cover what is contained in the two documents that we tabled during March, the strategic plan of the department and the annual performance plan of the department. And we are hoping that the SLEP Committee on Economic and Development will note the report, and we are here to entertain questions. Thank you, Dr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Dr. Teacher. For the presentation. I will now take this opportunity to give to members to ask questions. You will then note the questions, perhaps responding to the questions, then you can ask the relevant units within the department to ask this in responding to the questions. Can we have hands, honourable members? Honourable Mafuibu, Honourable Papa, Honourable Kabangu, Honourable Dikhal, Honourable Makue. If you have your hand up, Honourable Lord? You have your hand up?
Can go ahead.
I want to do it this way. Let's start with you then.
Thanks. I think it's page 34. If you can just put the, what happened there that Limpopo got such a big annual target compared to the other provinces? What was the reason for it? And whatever the reason was, have you addressed what the problem was now going forward?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
My questions will be only two, but I'll be quicker. One will be on inspections and enforcement, and the second one will be on public employment services. Now, on inspections and employment, I just want to find out, when you do the inspection and the enforcement of those that you find to have acted unlawfully, I'm sure you sanction them, right? Now, is there anything you do more than that? I'm thinking of, you know, naming and shaming them as a deterrence. South Africans will know that this particular individual was found to have violated, you know, a particular applicable regulation. Right? Then secondly, quickly on public employment services, let's take it quickly and slowly again. When you register the job seekers, I want to know, how do you do that? Do these people walk into your offices? Or are you reaching out to them? Because many, because we're sitting now, as we know for a fact that in the first quarter 2017, the statistics tells us that unemployment rate has increased to 27.7%. Compared to 26.5% of the last or previous financial year. These are the people who are unsophisticated, laymen in the street, whom we see carrying billboards, I'm a painter, I'm a plumber. They can't even write what is a plumber and spell it properly, what is a paint. Do these people know how to access your services to be registered in a database? Are you reaching out to these people? Because we see them, with due respect, for lack of a better word, loitering in the street, desperate, and you are there to give them services. You reach out to them. Secondly, on the issue of the target is 634,503, and the unemployment rate now, to be exact, is just way above 9 million South Africans are unemployed. Isn't that target low? And then, how do you, your database, now in your database, as you register those people, do you screen them? How do you register them? Do you help them prepare CVs? And is this database accessible and transparent? Can a South African, a fellow South African sitting in his home or her home, access this database to see how many people are registered and to see those that have been lucky or successful in job placement? Can you tell us, is this open and transparent so that people will be able to say, this is fair, I was 96 on the list, and I was lucky I was placed, or I could safely say I am there in the database. And lastly, Chairperson, the issue of, on inspection, foreign nationals. In terms of the Employment Services Act, the employment nationals, regulated that they must have a valid permit for any, employer to employ them. That's the law, right? Now, the question is, those that are found to have violated, particularly foreign nationals, because the outcry is that business people are unscrupulous, they're using foreign nationals that are that don't have the valid work permit to give them jobs. Now, hence I have said earlier on, those that are found to have violated the law, are they, exposed? And don't you see the need that there must be a transparent, they must be named and shamed, those that were found to have violated, so that we can deal with this issue that, labor is not, enforcing the laws as expected, as there is a general perception out there in our constituencies. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Madam
Papa.
Thank you, Chairperson, yes, as we all know, we don't want the Department of Labour to create jobs that is not their job. But I'm going to start off with asking the first question. Till a few years ago, the Department of Labour was also part of creating jobs by initiating training with their training facilities. So they had huge amount of people working in the Department of Labor, for the Department of Labor, with training companies, officials that were going to investigate to actually see if training takes place, etc. So they had officers going out, they had staff in the offices. My question is,
first one. What happened to these thousands of personnel? Because I'm telling you, it's thousands of personnel that work at, and they must still be working at the Department of Labor. What happened to them? What are they doing now? Because this has, this whole department, that whole division has been taken over by FET. We do know that now. So training is not taking part or place in the Department of Labor anymore, through the Department of Labor. What happens to that huge staff component? Are they just sitting in offices? Because obviously other people were doing the job previously. It's not that you can now say, okay, you don't have a job, you people go and work in this person's office. I need to understand what happened to this part of the department. Second part... I need to understand what's happening there. Then on the Department of Labor, they've reduced all the target indicators across the entities and to approximately one-third of the previous indicators. Now, I need to understand, why do you reduce all your targets so little? Because now, I mean, if you do that, you've got less to come and say to Parliament. Because if I reduce all my targets, it's nice to say, I don't have 10 targets anymore, I'm only going to chase 3 targets. So when I come into Parliament, and I have to come explain, I only explain on 3 targets, because I've reduced my own target settings. Please, can you, I don't understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Can I also indicate that the Parliament will also have reduced the budget, the fact that we don't have much in terms of the food here, so, but you are free to say
thank you. Can they serve themselves?
Yeah.
But you are present. Chairperson, thank you very much for the presentation that was handed over to us. But I would like to know that what is the duty of this labor center? Because workers are complaining to Parliament about the labor matters that were supposed to be dealt by a labor center. Then number two, how are we going to improve the working relationship between the workers and the employees, because it's deteriorating, as I'm telling you. What is the purpose of registering workers, work seekers? Is it just to entice them or to make them feel the pain more? Because at the end of the day, only few are selected. I'm talking this from experience. Mm-hmm. Free State is always allocated small budget. If you can have a look at what is on the paper there. And Free State is one of the biggest provinces with more unemployed people. But in all what we have tabled here, they're getting a very small slice of cake. I think it's Free State and Western Cape, if I'm not mistaken. Last but not least, there is a complaint from Lutrans, from Harrismith, that people are not treated fairly well. I've reported this matter to Labour, but it seems as if it's getting attendance, because they've informed me in the Free State that they're going to send SARS and Labour. But I would like to know, what is it that you are doing in order to check the working relationship between the workers and their employees, because they are always forever harassed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me join my colleagues in welcoming the presentation. My question was taken, Chairperson, on the job seekers. but I was going to say it was going to be very good if we were given a presentation in writing as to how many people were helped after they have registered as job seekers. Maybe if they can finish us with that, I'll be happy, Chairperson, in future. My other question is on page 6-7. On outcome 11, the department wants to create a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. And the whole statement is to strengthen multilateral and bilateral relations. My question is, do we have a weak multilateral now and bilateral? If they are weak, what was the cause? And I'm also happy that you are ready to strengthen that. Thank you very much, Jesus.
Thank you very much. Honorable Makos.
Thank you, Jefferson. The grass always is green on the other side. Chair, let me welcome the presentation and appreciate that. My first question would relate to slide 13, where you are referring to supply chain management, but then indicating to us the irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure under the baseline. Now, if you look at slide 27, you're saying you will address that 100%. Can you tell us what progress has been made? We discovered that in many departments, supply chain management is a major challenge in terms of financial management. Can you give us an indication where is the department in terms of dealing with that challenge? My second is on slide 14, where you are referring to inspections. On the whole IES, can you give us the assurance that you have enough capacity? Or can you give us an indication, let me reformulate it, can you give us an indication whether you have enough capacity in IES to deal with what you have tabled in this APP as the objectives of that program? My third question, Chair, will be more by way of a request through you, Chairperson, to maybe ask that when you report to us on the progress you've made on the IPPs, can you come and give us specific progress that you have made with a very serious vulnerable group in our society, which is people with disabilities? Please do it when you give a report to us. And for now, you can just say whether it's possible. That you can also look at what's happening in other departments of government. I mean, most departments have set the target only at 3%. Personally, I feel that's not good enough. We should be doing more in ensuring decent employment also for people with disabilities. My final is going to be a political one. Have you as a department done any work to help us as we engage with what do we do with illegal mining? Let me end on the chair, thanks.
Thank you very much. I think it's over to you, team teaching, but I think some of the issues will be issues that will be followed up in terms of the quarterly report as to how far have you gone with regard to implementing your targets. But some of the issues, I think they relate to employment equity. But also, it's not just a question of the targets, but if those targets are not being met, what is it that you're doing?
you know, as you were indicating that the minister has tabled the report, I think the target was in June, but that has already been done. Every year we receive these reports, but there's no improvement. What is it that you're doing? I think it's similar to the first question that was asked. I'm sorry, the second question was asked by Mr. McQueen. The processes with regard to inspection and enforcement. You know that if a particular workplace is not complying, the inspectors will go and ask for undertaking, and if within a particular period, I'm not sure whether 7 days or not, if that is not met, and then the next step. I think that most of the problem, after the undertaking, nothing most of the time happens. When the inspectors will go get an undertaking, after that there's a gray area in terms of implementing the processes. So I'm just elaborating on the question that was asked earlier. Because, you know, these things we see in our own eyes when we visit. I know in East London, for example, at Vincent, there's one spa, you know, workers there, the cashiers, are standing throughout the day, the cashiers. And it's a matter, I know, I have raised this with Mr. Tengosim Khalid, but that problem is still there. And sometimes I decide to avoid that particular spa and go to another, because it hurts me every time I see this spa inside in Islam. And there's the ladies there, they always look at me because they reported this to me. And I took it up with, I think at the time it was Mr. Matiwan in the province, understand he's no longer tenor. And I took it up with Mr. Mkalipi. I don't know what's happening with that particular case now. But I'm saying, whilst we might be having these targets, but on the ground, the point that was raised by Mr. Chabang, on the ground, you know, so this thing must not only be on paper. We must see them happening on the ground. You know, it's like this new term of radical economic transformation. What does it mean for people in the rural areas, in the village? What does this thing of control, management, ownership mean? I'm just elaborating on the definition of what the president defined the radical economic transformation. But then, in real time, what does it mean for people on the ground? But also, it got to do with the issue of the inspectors. I mean, you were giving us the breakdown with regard to the offices, the labor centers, the satellite offices, the mobile units, and so forth. I wish you could also do the same. Perhaps it's something that we must request that you provide us with that information, if maybe any of the heads of units do have that information. It's fine if it could be given to us, but if not, then a follow-up could be made with regard to that particular information. How many inspectors do you have? And also the breakdown in terms of provinces, even in terms of labor centers, for that matter. And also whether they are given specific areas of focus. For example, there will be inspectors for health and safety, occupational health and safety, for example. There will be inspectors that focus on basic conditions of employment act, including the sectoral determination. So do you have inspectors that these are dedicated for farm workers, for example? They don't do anything else, that they only focusing on the farm workers. These are inspectors that solely focus on domestic workers. I'm just highlighting the Balanga sector, but there are other sectors as well. But that kind of a breakdown. There are so many nationally, the province, these are the numbers for employment equity, these are the inspectors, the number, the province, for occupational health and safety, you know, and so forth. That make sense? So that kind of a breakdown. I don't know if you do have, but if you don't, but we need to move towards that so that we don't just generalize. You send an inspector tomorrow to go to Sobra Checkers. The next day, the inspector goes to a hotel or his hospital in there. So we need to have inspectors that will be sector specific in terms of their focus. maybe then you can just take us through the responses.
Thank you, Honorable Members and Honorable Chairperson. I'll ask Mr. Maduna to quickly touch on the questions related to budget allocations and irregular expenditure. And I'll ask Ms. Sikile Ngana to deal with the inspection and enforcement. And I will come on the labor policy questions and public employment services in the summer.
On the issue relating to irregular expenditure on slide 13, and also vis-a-vis the targets that we have set on slide 27. In terms of the targets, the PFMA is very, very specific in terms of what needs to be achieved. So we couldn't probably put anything less than 100% in terms of achievement. However, the practical element is that we are working with people throughout the country who need to apply the rules and regulation as stipulated, and in more ways than one, the knowledge seem to differ, and there are hiccups here and there. What we try on a regular basis is to conduct training for all the officials of the department, more especially those ones that are approving the financial transactions. However, due to the staff turnover, people moving on, the ones that have trained, moving to other areas, you then have some hiccups here and there. However, once those challenges in terms of non-compliance has been detected, I think the consequential management then follows in finance. We do investigate. Once detected, we do investigate and we take necessary action to the officials of the department. The target is to reduce, more especially the fruitless and wasteful, because those are the amounts that you are not supposed to incur interest and penalties that are not supposed to be there. The target is probably to make sure that that doesn't happen, but now and then we do detect such amounts. However, it is a continuous exercise of training and retraining officials, more especially if they are promoted to higher positions with bigger responsibilities.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. I'll be responding on the questions on inspection and enforcement services. I'll start firstly with the issue of the target of Limpopo for 216 and other provinces having 96. We've allocated targets based on the human resources that we have in a particular province. And Limpopo happened to be one of the provinces that had inspectors at a higher level. And if you check the slide 34, you'll notice that when it comes to audits, there is a lesser target for Limpopo. It's 1,440, and others have more on that slide because the inspectors at that level that are conducting procedures are less in Limpopo. And then when you go to slide 34, you see that
Can you link this question of Limpopo with the issue of there was a question on the foreign nationals, and most of I think most of them would come to that particular province, and this is where perhaps they could be used illegally by employers, and therefore that would require more in terms of inspection of the workplaces in Limpopo. For me, rather than reducing the target, it should increase the target because of that particular challenge.
Okay. Chair, this one talks to the unemployment insurance fund and its contributions. It's not talking to basic conditions of employment.
Okay.
So this one...
No, I thought you were responding to the question that was raised by Honorable.
Yes, thanks, Chair.
Okay.
So this one, it talks to unemployment insurance fund.
Okay.
I hope the answer is understood.
Are you happy with the rationale they're using?
Yes.
To me, that rationale is
rational, doesn't work.
That rationale, you know, with Joris Bell is ill-conceived and misplaced, because you cannot use the resources that you have. You must look at the need. If you can always reshuffle the resources, you know, transfer people to provinces where there's a need. But you cannot simply say, in this province we've got less people, then we will do less. It cannot be. That rationale is ill-conceived and seriously misplaced. It's unacceptable.
Maybe that clarify your response so that it's clear, like you clarified my that you were talking about the UIF, so I'm clear. Perhaps also with regard to the concern, in your response, you also clarified the
without making yourself a
no, I'm not a politician. I think what I want to explain here is, I'll just give a detail when it comes to employer auditors in the provinces. We have employer auditors in the provinces that are mainly dealing with and we'll allocate the number of inspectors based on the whether the province is big or small. And we have, for instance, we have SR10 at that particular province, and we have SR11. See? Then the target will be based on the level of that person. So if you have more people at a lower level, you'll have a bigger target on that, because you have procedural inspection and audit itself. So for procedural, you are just checking the compliance of those employers in terms of their size. If it's a big company, you'll have a more target on the small companies. It's based on the SR levels of the people. It's not based on, you may have 10 people in the Eastern Cape and have 10 people in Limpopo, but the levels that they are pitched on are not the same because of the number of companies that are in that particular province and its size. The second one was talking to the issue of dealing with non-compliant employers.
There will be follow-up if there's a round of clarifying.
Okay. Dealing with non-compliant employers. Yes, we issue a notice and we give an employer a certain period to comply with that notice. And almost in all our legislation, we say the employer must comply within 14 days. And we tried after the amendment in 2014 to make sure that you don't issue a compliance, an undertaking and a compliance order. You only issue one notice. So that after the expiry of the notice, you refer that employer to court. We do refer the employer to court. But one of our challenges that we have is the number of people that must refer the cases to court. That is number one. Number two, even if we refer the cases to court, the labor courts that we are using, they are very slow in dealing with our cases. And sometimes we get responses from the registrars at the labor courts to say we don't have enough judges to deal with your cases. And number two, if you take, for instance, the Bramfontein Labour Court, it's dealing with almost six provinces. Now, they're saying we have all the cases that are coming from the Department of Labour, but we are not only dealing with the Department of Labour cases. So we have to wait for them because they are outside the jurisdiction of the Department of Labour. So the question of naming and shaming Chairperson, we have not started doing that. The minister has instructed us to do that when in this financial year. We have started compiling those. For instance, we had last year six municipalities that failed to report in terms of Employment Equity Act. We started engaging with the SALGAS to make sure that in the future they must know that we will be taking them to the media to ensure that they comply with the legislation. On the question of assurance of enough capacity of inspectors, I can safely say, Chair, that the target that we set for this financial year, that is the 217 inspections that we conduct, was set based on the capacity that we have. So I can give that assurance that we'll be able to achieve the target set, because we've checked whether we have enough human capacity, the financial resources, the cars and the workplaces to inspect. On the question of employment equity, the slow transformation, yes, we have noted that, Chair. And one of our challenges that we had is that though the Employment Equity Act was promulgated plus minus 20 years ago, we didn't have inspectors that were dealing specifically with or trained to deal with Employment Equity Act. Before we ratified Convention 81, we had generalistic inspectors instead of that we're dealing with everything. Now, after ratifying the convention, the department tried to respond by specializing in terms of each legislation, whether it's BCA, we must have only inspectors that are dealing with BCA based on the skills that they have. But we are still struggling when it comes to employment equity, because I think last year, or 2015-16, National Treasurer promised the department to give us $64 million in order to address the issue of having inspectors that are trained or that qualify to conduct inspections on employment equity. But that money was reversed. It was taken away. We ended up using the inspectors that are employed for BCA. We take them and train them to do employment equity. So we're still struggling there, Chair, but we are trying to make amends on the issue. Because they were responding to the issue of fees must fall, so they decided to take the money away from the department. Okay, with regards to the issue of breakdown, we have that information, but it's not readily available now. I'll just make an example. On OHS, we only have 140 inspectors for the country, and that's not enough, Chair. We understand that. That's why we see that under OHS, we only have 20,000 inspections to conduct in this financial year. But we are trying to work with the compensation fund to because OHS inspectors are a preventative arm, so we'll be able to get funding from the compensation fund to assist us to fill in the vacancies that we have under occupational health and safety and increase those inspectors. There are inspectors that are located at all the labor centers, but it's not all components. You find that it's only mainly PCA, because we did not have the money to implement the second phase of specialization because of the funding. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. There are five areas that I believe are all of a follow-up. The first one relates to the total number of inspectors in the provinces and labor centers. That information we can provide, just including a breakdown on in terms of how many we have where. Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, we brought Mr. Ntabo here so that he can also understand that you as honorable members do interact with a number of people. So on the second issue that we must follow up, in the spa in the East London, the new chief provincial director there is Mr. Gamo. We'll follow up with him on that issue. And the same applies to the report of the department. I'm sure once we are now almost about to finish the first quarter of the 17-18, and when we come to yourself to present our first semester or first quarter implementation of the APP for 17-18, Mrs. Gaba, who is the chief director in the planning section of our department here, we've taken note that and we'll make sure that not only do we provide a breakdown in terms of the people we assist, but also with people with disability that we also assist. And I can also assure members that this department, especially through the 12 factories that we have, and our intention to expand employment in that area, and there are two such factories in Cape Town that honourable members can visit anytime when you are free in Epping, and the other one when you go towards airport, that is producing the whole textile that is the pyjamas, sheets and everything for the Hotelskill hospital. Those are people with disability that ordinarily would be drawing social grants, but the Department of Labor has seen it fit to make sure that those citizens are engaged and they remain active in the economy and they are removed from the social grant payroll. So we practice what we preach, and you are free. It's only in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga where we don't have such factories, but there are processes of establishing them so that we can have a footprint throughout the country and we can increase the capacity. But we will make sure that our report, when it comes, provides that base breakdown. And also the issue around information on the work seekers that we would have.
That's a link on the issue of I think there was an issue that he raised with regard to.
No, we always deal with the department. Yeah, most of them, they always report that they have not met the target. So the question was, is the department responsible? Because it falls under, I think, employment equity as well. What is it that you're doing to ensure that the department meets their target? Because most of the time, they all report, not only the department, but also their entities. Always report that they have not attended the target. Sometimes they would meet targets with regard to women, but they always fail to meet the target on the people. Before you go to the work seekers issue. Yes, I think that one is also part of what Ms. Nganga referred to as the follow-up process that we would normally have after the submission of reports. We do take on even our own colleagues. Once they've submitted their reports, there is a process called the DG review, where when we look at the reports, we realize that there is no change or improvement. We identify a number of companies where a detailed review process is then conducted, and then where they did not meet their plans, that's when this other aspect kick in, like the funds. We do have issues in terms of government departments because of cooperative governance and so on. But there are also processes that resolve such issues when a department is not complying. And in government...
Are you saying you find them?
No, there are processes that are different from those of the private sector. I'm sure honorable members are familiar with the kind of member section 32 of the Constitution on cooperative governance. We handle differences in government through interdepartmental relations process, and we saw that in the private sector, that's what we do, but I'm sure the minister highlighted this problem that some departments, companies just budget for that fund and they simply paid, and hence the whole question of the review of the funds as to whether they are effective. But I was just raising that issue on disability, etc. On the fourth point, I think we will also provide data on the work seekers that would have assisted and after cancelling what happens, because we do have a breakdown on those that go into training and so on. And the fifth issue is around the aerosmith. I'm glad that you are saying that there is progress. However, if I can have the details so that I can also follow up with the Free State office to make sure that that complaint is followed up. There were a number of issues that also relate to labor policy.
That's because there was a question whether the people who work in the office.
I'll deal with the labor policy issues and then I'll complete with the public employment services related one. Now, on the labor policy issues, that there was a question around the multilateral and bilateral, whether they are weak or not. I must say that we're doing our level best to work firstly with the SADC, Ministers of Labor and Social Affairs, because that's what we have. And the whole idea is to make sure that they strengthen their labor laws and they are in line with the ILO conventions and so on. Because what is happening, honorable members, is that companies that do not comply simply relocate either to Lesotho, establish a plant there, manufacture products and send them back to South Africa. Now, and in some cases, companies or people from the neighboring countries would come to South Africa because of non-employment. There are issues around transfer of emoluments, such as UIF and all those kind of things. And we are trying to ensure that within the SADC region, we have synergy in terms of our labor laws, because the minute you have a situation where the labor laws in one country are low, then you have exploitation of workers in there. But we have not only stopped in the SADC, we are also doing it as part of the AU, and we're broadening that so that within the AU, and when we, I'm sure some of you have been to the ILO, when you go to the ILO, you don't speak as an ILO, we speak as an African bloc, and that's why we're trying to do that. But we also have bilateral with other countries that we have interest in. There was a question also on labor relations, on improving the relations between employers and workers. Now, most of the laws in the labor relations, the collective bargaining agreements, are intended to do that. The reality, honorable members, is that the unionization in the country is very low, less than 30%. Now, you can imagine if we have 70% of workers not unionized, the the bulk of the problem now shifts to the department. Even when we have unions, we are paying the trailer, and the minister was on record to say to the trade unions that we are giving you money to fund institutions such as the trailer. But the training of shop stewards is not like in the olden days. And an organizer, when they have a problem in the plant, instead of solving the problem, they phone the Department of Labor inspectors to come and do inspection. Now, with 1,000 inspectors, we can do whatever we can, but the numbers are not sufficient. And I think under the circumstances, we're doing our best. We do have witnesses here and there, but I think this is a matter that when we had a special session 2 weeks back with the trade unions, it was just us, the department, and all the federations where this issue was raised extensively around their capacity also to help the department in terms of implementing equity. I mean, in doing work that is unsafe, workers and trade unions are supposed to know that this is not safe. They should wait for the department to come in and do that. I think those are some of the things. On the role of labor centers around complaints, I think it is within that context that the labor centers continue to do their work, including taking complaints, referring them to the CCMA, providing public employment services, paying UIF compensation, and so on. Now, if I can go to the other questions that relate to public employment services, the question on registration of work seekers and how is it done. Now, I would invite honorable members just behind the hotel here, I'm sure you may be familiar where the police station is. Our labor center is situated there. Honorable members are welcome to go in there. Now, on how we go about doing it is that we've got manual forms, which is one of the things we use, but we are increasing and moving with time in terms of installing kiosks, self-service stations, and you are welcome to visit this office anytime. You will see there were web seekers. I mean, we are beginning to provide our services online where people can register themselves, because when people register themselves, they fill all the fields and the matching becomes easier. When the queues are long and our officials do the registration, sometimes they don't fill all the fields and then the matching becomes difficult. So we have had a very good success rate where people register themselves on the system. We have made that application to be available on the internet, but honorable member, we are very cautious because the Employment Services Act and the POPI Act is very clear in terms of making the information, especially personal information of people, available. So we have to comply with that, and that is why that information cannot be publicly available to everyone. It's part of the controls that had to be put in because there is misuse of information. I mean, we have had incidences where people will say, I want work seekers. You refer people there only to find that these are brothels or whatever. And you have to screen employers and make sure that the people that you refer to are going to genuine employment opportunities. You can't be reckless with personal information of people. And we have buses that also go about reaching to rural areas, like I said, and visiting points and tuition centers. And recently, as from the 1st of April, wherever you see e-gov signs through SIT in the post office and so on, and even here in Parliament, 2 weeks back when the minister was presenting the budget vote,
those of you who managed to go to the FITA tent, you may have seen that for corporate visas, for and even for registration of work seekers, we have introduced that service where the pilot, where we can be utilized, or the FITA used the department as a pilot for the general public to access government services through FITA. So that is another form. And we are finishing an app on the phone, because we have since realized that even in rural areas, people have cell phones and then don't be able to use it. And the new mode of cars that we are buying, we are going the Wi-Fi, because the satellite dishes in some cases do not have adequate reception. And when the satellite and even the buses, wherever the buses are stationed, we provide free Wi-Fi services, and people who have their phone and laptop can easily register themselves as long as they are within the vicinity of the satellite. So those are some of the means that we use. We have pamphlets, we have regular job fairs, and I'm sure some of you may have visited some. Or when we talk about job fairs, you can come in. That is where we go to stadiums. We invite various companies, and part of the bulk of the June 16 Youth Month activities, jointly with the NYTA, the Department of Arts and Culture, you will see everywhere in all those activities the Department of Labor with our registration points providing those services, counseling and matching. Now, you asked Honorable Chairperson what happened to the training facilities. Obviously, the staff that were in the department when the president decided to split the division that I was heading, employment and skills development, into two, we remained with the employment services. Skills development went with the department to the Department of Higher Education. So the staff that was in the skills development were transferred. But the staff that were in the 151 or so training centers, regional training centers that existed throughout the country, most of them were not necessarily government employees. They were employed by Section 21 companies. Now, it is unfortunate, Honorable Chairperson and members, that because of the change of focus, some of those entities, I think in the Eastern Cape you have East Cape Training Center, and then in other areas, the border and others, but those are some of the few. The rest unfortunately closed down, staff got retrenched, equipment was sold out, and some were taken to be part of extension of TVET colleges and FETs, and the staff were absorbed there. And unfortunately, there was also a change of focus on the role further. The training interventions that the department used to do that were between 3 months, 6 weeks and 3 months, that is training person to paint and all that. Unfortunately, most of those were discontinued, and they are no longer happening. And there's a discussion now as to what should be done, especially given the high rate of unemployment, or whether the decision is correct or not. And I think those are some of the things that we will happen going forward. And there were questions, Honorable Chair, around, I think the other set of questions were going back to what the Deputy Minister was saying, that it was not out of our own free will to just reach the target. It was based on the reality. I'm sure most of you were quite aware that when we complained about the number of inspectors, yeah. Treasury, we can attest to that.
that were given the money to increase the capacity to deal with the problem. And thank you for making this issue or raising it in Parliament. Treasury responded and gave us the money. However, unfortunately, at the last minute, when the budget was supposed to be released and there was a reprioritization, we were, like other departments, part of the people that we impacted upon. And the money that was initially to be given to us had to be reprioritized. And hence, the number of inspectors and so on could not be increased, including the career counselors, because this program was seen as very, very relevant in making impact on levels of unemployment. However, the reality resulted in us having to lose that fund. So I think there was a question on the ESA, which I said that for control purposes, a lot of people would want to have direct access, but we couldn't. But what you can see on the labor centers, the opportunities that are registered, there are screens. If you go to the labor center, which is less than 2 kilometers, not even a kilometer from here, you will see screens as opportunities are registered throughout the country. The database shows them. Now, there was a question also on why the number is low. Now, the target is just for the year. The database is sitting with 4.8 million, which is not completely far off the Statistic SA figure of about 5.2. And you have a problem of what they call the need, those that are not in employment or not in education. All of us are trying to capture them. Reasons why we register. Obviously, the country needs to know when we say who is unemployed. Obviously, you need to know where that person is, what skills do they possess, and where can we locate them in the country. Secondly, if there are employment opportunities. Currently, the economic situation is bad, but with the improvement, we want to be able to look for them and to place them in employment, but we also want to give them opportunities that arise. And the counseling services is doing quite a lot, because when you take people, you counsel them and you give them information, you guide them on where they can actually get finances, where how they can start cooperatives. You are empowering people, and in most cases, those who are found to have taken advantage of the counseling services are using it. What we were asked to do was to sharpen our tools for tracer studies, which is like what you have asked us, what happens to people that were counseled, so that we can track them and see after 2 years or a year after counseling as to where they've gone to. So these are some of the things the question on the multinational I dealt with, and the
thank you very much.
As the department, we are not doing anything directly.
I'll
touch on the foreign national and on this. On the mining, honorable members may know that you have this demarcation of responsibilities and scope. Largely, the inspection
in the mining is done in terms of the Mining Occupational Health and Safety Act. Our inspectors are not allowed to conduct inspections in the mining. However, the Department of Labor is responsible for licensing under the Compensations Act, the Rand Mutual Association, which provides compensation in cases of occupational injuries and diseases that arise in the mining. It has been a concern to all of us because you have people there, syndicates, and in most cases there is no employment relation because the employment is partly linked to syndicates that operate there, and it's something that we have taken on in our discussions with the minerals and energy and Odingwa, which falls within the Department of Health, and I'm sure honourable members may be aware of the post employment interventions and the diseases that people suffer after they've left mine, that we're trying to assist all those workers either to get access to medical assistance and to claim some of the funds that are located within the various mining houses. That is what we're doing. On migration, there are a number of issues. Our Act and the Immigration Act requires that the Department of Labor plays a major role in terms of making sure when a company applies for a corporate permit. Corporate is basically when companies want to bring in a certain number of people, like in the agriculture for harvesting, sheep shearing, etc. The whole idea is that we have to make sure that they exhaust all channels before we can advise the Department of Home Affairs to grant them the applicable corporate permits. Now, channels means that they have exhausted all processes of looking for local labor, and they can provide proof that they couldn't get such people, and where they are to bring foreign nationals, they comply to minimum standards like the sectoral determination and so on. The challenge, however, honorable members, is that you may be aware that we have people who come in for asylum seeker status and they end up getting refugee status, and because we don't have camps in South Africa, those people are allowed to work. And when they work, unfortunately, they subject themselves to substandards because they are foreign nationals. Secondly, you also have a large number of undocumented foreign nationals who will settle for any employment and they will never report. You get such reports when somebody has lost their hands or when they've died. In some cases, employers drop them in a hospital and disappear. That's when you get to know where they were employed. And sometimes employers refuse that they ever employed those people because they know that under the Immigration Act, they can be eligible for a serious fine for employing a foreign national without the necessary documentation. There are interventions that we are doing, and this is not only restricted to the department. Honorable members may be aware that there is an interministerial committee that consists of the police because of illegal, crime that goes through the countries and all that, and the border control, the defense force, the intelligence because of a whole range of illicit crime. The trading industry because of the illicit trade that is taking place, the Department of Labor, Department of Home Affairs, and all of us and the Department of, that is the local and provincial government,
because of the movement and the movement in terms of the various urban areas and the housing issues that they are confronting in the various local municipalities. So every one of us has been given specific tasks. For instance, we are responsible for doing the things that some honorable members have raised. We are supposed to report on the joint raids that we conduct with the Home Affairs Department in US Pass, Pick and Pay, the construction industry, the security industry, agricultural sectors, etc. Wherever we get tip-off. And you know, with the advent of cell phones, we hit two or three farms. By the time you get to the fourth farm, information has reached them. And some of these farms are big, that they hide some of the people and so on. So, but we do those raids with the police and so on. And there are such ongoing interventions. There are arrangements for change of hours for our staff to work weekends and after hours, because the restaurants where the majority of foreign nationals that are undocumented and are not registered and they are paid on tips, you can't find them during the day. You can only find them at night when, you know, it's very busy. So we have studied how they operate, and as part of the joint operation with the various departments that I mentioned. I'm sure you may have seen the raids and all that. Some people were complaining that we are not publicizing some of those things, like the hawks, etc. But I think on the joint operation, there was sensitivity also that if you know, some of those things you don't, you are in trouble, you do some of them, you are in trouble. We were sensitive and afraid of some of these things being interpreted negatively in the various missions that are in the country, because where such people are found, there has been massive deportations, but Home Affairs has chosen to play a low profile because they have got political sensitivity, and also you are quite aware of the xenophobic attacks that happen. And we didn't want, through this action, to fuel some of the fires that exist. And hence, we did not go for massive publicity of some of those things. But we are involved and we are doing some of these. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we've just had all the questions now.
May I ask you a question? Just one question.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Now, just on the issue of good governance, you're on page 13, CFO and acting DG, $82.4 million on irregular expenditure, $29.4 million, sorry, on irregular expenditure, and 82,000 on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. 13 cases for irregular expenditure, 13 cases for fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Now, in your annual performance plan for this current financial year, I don't seem to understand how do you plan to make sure that you avert the recurrence of the same. 29.4 million is huge, exorbitant. Now, on the 21st of June, we will be debating your budget, whether we support or reject it. Now, we must be taken to confidence. And truly, Chairperson, I want to ask if you can give us a detailed list of how you dealt with those 26 cases. If misconduct and or criminal cases, have you referred these cases to the police? Or are these internal cases you're dealing with in terms of misconduct? And if so, give us a detailed, you know, explanation of what you have done, what is the status of these cases that these cases dating from the previous financial year. We need to know, get that information to you, Chairperson, before the 21st of June. That's my appeal, Chairperson, through you.
Did you deal with the annual report of 2015-2016, or will it come to those? Which annual report did we deal with?
This comes from that Honorable Makwe. You might have missed it during that particular reporting. I know I wasn't there. The Honorable Makwe was chairing that time. No, I'm not saying it was supply, but I'm saying that when we deal with the annual report, we must pick up these issues and not wait until they come as a baseline in the annual performance report. Because if, you know, some department, they don't, when they come with their annual performance plan, they don't go back to the issues of baseline and all that stuff. They just say, this is our annual performance report in terms of the presentation. And then you may not pick up your assistant here because now they put it as a baseline. But I'm not saying that that information should not be provided. Can we have that information then in writing? But I'm just cautioning members that these issues, when they appear in the annual reports, let's raise them there in the annual report, and so that this information is provided immediately. Now we're dealing with APP of 2017-2018, right? But can we make sure that we receive the information? But I know we're still going to get an annual report of 2016-2017. But unfortunately, we might get it around January or so, as it will be. It will be ready in August, but I'm saying in terms of our own program, we might not be able to deal with it at that particular time, but it depends on how we structure our own program. I know because of the number of departments and entities that we deal with as a NCOP, because we are only 54 members spread across all these departments, I think 34 if I'm not mistaken, all the departments. But we have to combine. For instance, this committee deals with six departments and 31 entities. For example, we might call CCMA or NetLag, Productivity South Africa. So, it means by the time we deal with your annual report, it might be January. Because of that, the difficulty with the NCOP, it's easier with the NA because they can deal with these issues. That's why I was saying just focus on the annual target. It's easy for the NA, they call you regularly to report now on your quarterly targets as well. But I'm sure the issue that you're raising that appears in 2015, then what you'll do, Honorable Makwebe, then you'll make the comparison. In the baseline of 2015-2016, this is what was happening with regard to the regular expenditure. So many numbers of people were involved, whether there is an improvement now in the annual report of 2016-2017. Meaning that acting DG, as it's a matter that will convey to the DG as well, that when you then report to us on the annual report, you must take into account that point, that you must also give us details of what has, if there are people that are involved in irregular expenditure, what is the consequence management. Whether the people were dismissed, whether cases were open. I know he always even wanted sometimes even the case number. I know that question he always asked. It was reported in police station. And so even with this one,
when you provide this information, you must be able to see what happened to those people who were involved in the irregular expenditure, if it was a misconduct, if there were any cases that were open, just to advise, so that when you come and we don't again say where are the case numbers, you must also provide case numbers as well. If the misconduct was such that it is a crime, not just a misconduct, but it has been elevated to a situation where it is a crime. So I must indicate that, so that you don't come and report and then you go again and you must come and back again and report on the same issue. So once I say you provide this information for 2015-2016, prepare yourself that a similar question might come for the annual report as well. So when you present the annual report, bring the final details of that. And I remember, I think we've come to the end of this meeting. What we are going to do now, in line with the last page of the presentation, they want us to note the presentation, but we have it in a form of a resolution, which I will read to you, and therefore we'll ask for the mover and the seconder for this resolution of this committee report, which reads as follows. The report of the FLEP Committee on Economic and Business Development on Budget Vote 18, Labour, and Annual Report Performance Plan 2017-2018 of the Department of Labour, dated 6 June 2017. The Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, having considered Budget Vote 18, a report that it has concluded its deliberation thereon, the report to be considered. Can we have a mover and a seconder? Makue and Honorable Kimunye. Thank you very much, Acting DG and your team. Thank you for the presentation of the annual performance plan. We will definitely make sure that in some of the critical areas, even though we say we have these challenges as a select committee, of not able to bring you as often as the portfolio committee of NHS. But there are specific areas that you will be really focusing on. But also with regard to perhaps in your future reports, particularly annual reports, and also other briefings to the committee. This issue of labor court cases is a matter of concern for the committee. Sometimes you hear of a huge incident or accident. I know, I remember there was a bridge that fell at Kuha some years ago. I don't know what happened to that particular case now. Could have been concluded, you know, that it was going to go to labor court. I don't know the outcome. There's this issue of Mpumalanga where even today, people are still underground. I don't know what's going to happen with regard to that, whether there will be court processes. But where there are these delays that you're talking about, we also have members here of Parliament who sit in the governing bodies of these courts. We've got members who sit in the Judicial Services Commission, in the Magistrates Commission. I think you sit in one of them, yes. So we can make use of, you make use of the Select Committee and report this in detail, that this is a case, this is a particular case that this particular company did not comply with this particular act. Gave us an undertaking, and we did this in terms of compliance. We went to court, but now the delay is at the level of court, and it has been at that level for this particular period, and there's no progress. So that members who sit in these structures are able then to take those issues up. But also over and above that, there is a specific committee that is responsible for the Department of Justice, a civil committee that is responsible for that. This committee, we can also interact with such committees. But also, not only with regard to this issue of court cases, but also issues regarding the issue. We said it's 64 million that was taken back, 64 million. So those issues should be reported. We should not be probing you on those issues. They should come up as part of your report. Because they will have members of sit in finance committee that must be able to raise those, because Minister of Finance attends the finance committee. He must be able to account what happened to these monies. We have members who sit in the appropriations committees, for example. So I'm saying that you don't just come to report. You must also come so that we also assist you as members. You know, it should not just be probing questions, but you should be saying that we also have these limitations here. And you ask the Parliament to assist you with regard to resolving some of the problems or challenges that you face. Yeah. The issue of the severe identity, I think for me it's a political question which could be addressed at some stage, because it's a responsibility of the state to protect. The issue of unionization, it's because people feel that they're not protected, and it's a responsibility of the state to protect. It's just like that we police are supposed to be protecting us, but when you feel that they're falling short, then you try and have your own ADT or another security company. But otherwise, the responsibility, you're not supposed to be even having that ADT if the state was able to protect you. So I'm saying the issue of unions, it's a last resort. So you must understand that even when we say 78, it could be even 100%, it would be your responsibility as a state to protect the workers because they are citizens of the country. The fact that they unionize themselves is because they feel that they're not protected. But maybe this 70%, maybe they feel that they are still protected by the state. So you must also take it to be that as a plus, fact that there's a reduction in terms of unionization, it means that the state is doing its job to protect the government, and as such, they don't see the need to join unions. Like you would know, Sam, that you know, there used to be strikes just for recognition agreement, let alone wage strikes. The Devon strikes of 1973 were about recognition of unions. That is no longer an issue now because the law provides for the recognition of unions. So workers may not join it because they know that some of the are now codified, some of the rights are codified now. They don't need to, for example, this issue of the minimum wages. Even if there's a bargaining council, it's negotiated, there's a minister like you were reporting after 30 days, the minister will just gazette that particular agreement, and therefore all the workers in that particular sector benefit. So the state is also contributing to the to workers not being interested now in union, because they are protected. It's only when it comes to perhaps the issues of dismissals. Even there, the processes to CCME are simpler now compared to those issues of conciliation boards and industrial courts, you know. So things are, so you know, you should not look at it negatively. You should look at it that the state has done its part. And as such, workers don't see the need to get unionized. It's a political question, I know. But, okay, thank you very much. We'll see you next week. I'm sure you'll be accompanying the minister when we'll be debating this issue further. We'll allow you to leave because we now go to deal with the other items on the agenda. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we'll deal now with the minutes of the last meeting. It was held. Order. Minutes of the meeting that was held on the 30th of May 2017. We'll go page by page. For confirmation, correction, omission. Page 1. Page 2. Page 2, okay.
Page 2, we need to do 22 changes there.
Okay.
Where we have the parliamentary support staff. Is there any action?
Oh, yes.
And then if we deal with the apology and the two chairs, we then also have to register the apology there of our committee secretary.
Yes. Okay.
Under point 3, Chair,
yes.
The second sentence, can't say the then. It means he referring
to
the minister.
He then requested.
He then requested the deputy minister, Mr. Masuku, to present the
okay. Thank you very much. Are there any other correction on page 2?
Mr. the Honourable is quite correct. I thought that we agreed that what we'll do is that we will register that in the minutes of the 31st of March. Sorry, the 31st of May.
Okay.
So we must just make sure when we look at that minute that this is registered.
Okay.
All right. Concern, no, let me leave it.
So you say you do have now the budget? Or you still have a challenge?
Yes. It was not taking any image for quite a long time. It was saying the emails are constructed in a way that they cannot be received by the I have reported that, persistently reported that, but it was
okay, we're still on the confirmation of minutes. On page 3, are there any corrections? If not, page 4. Can I have your access to members? Yeah. Page 4. And the last page.
Chair Bacon, ask for an amendment. Just before adjournment, we should have a sentence that says the committee accepted this proposal, which is a proposal for us to do oversight in London.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. With that, can we have a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes? Honourable Makuan, Honourable Chimun. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. For my side, I don't have any announcements that have been brought to my attention.
Oh, there was, I thought that they circulated the withdrawal. There was a letter that Grace told me about the invitation from the Small Business Development after the sitting this evening, but that subsequently that has now been withdrawn.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
No, you raise your hand up. I'm telling you.
Okay.
Chairperson, can I now raise that?
Yes, yeah,
thanks, Chairperson. Yes, I don't want to steal his point of order, but it is quite serious. This Malaysia-Singapore oversight of ours, we said, the week before, the honourable member asked the question when we will get the full report, and I could recall that Honourable McCoy was saying that he already got the report, but that he can give it to us. But there's one or two things he wants to change. I want to just understand what is happening on this report, as we all want this report already a while ago. If we can get information on that, it will be fine. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Chairperson, I appreciate that the members are raising that. They are quite right. The promise has been made, and it has not been fulfilled. And particularly the last part of what the honourable member is raising, the fact that the officials cannot give out that report in time must be registered. And I would want to then caucus with you, Chairperson, that we take this up with the manager of the department. I noticed then that the same official who is letting us down, not to get the impression that it's everybody, is not even in the meeting today. Where is he when we have meetings? He's supposed to be here. And we raise those two matters with the manager chair. I have not seen an apology. Honourable members, we want to say you are quite right. I share it with you. I can show you an email that I have written to Chebeka on Friday to say to him, update me on where we are with it. It's not Chebeka's fault. The other members are waiting. The other support staff are waiting for that one support staff to give them the report. We can't work on something that we do not have. And that delay is negligence.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, yes, I just need clarity because I actually understood that Honourable Makuwe has already got a preliminary report. This is how I understood it. What is the difference between the preliminary report that the official gave and the one that is now outstanding? Why can't we then have the preliminary report?
Prepared to share that, Chair. What happened was that one staff person, you see, Chebeka worked on the report. He presented it to the MENCOM. When the MENCOM looked at it, we had the other support staff members present as well. And they were saying that, look, Chairpersons, we are not happy with what we put in before you. Give us some time so that we can improve on the quality of that. For example, if we went to EMA, they are saying that there's not enough substance as to what is it that we got out of the engagement with EMA. And out of respect for the capacity and the enthusiasm of the staff, we then said, okay, improved on that. Now, I'm not sure if Grace would still have that preliminary report. But my concern, just to conclude, Ancha, is if we give you the preliminary report, is to give you a shoe without soles. You're going to work on it, and it may change drastically. And therefore, we felt that in respect for your time, we wouldn't give you something that is going to be changed drastically. The promise that we have had, let me repeat it, Chairperson, is that by last week, Saturday, not the Saturday, but the week before that, that report was supposed to be finalized. And then the support staff said that they will give us a copy that they have worked on by Tuesday of last week. I engaged with Zbu, who's here, last week, Tuesday, and he said to me, but he didn't receive anything. Remember, Grace wasn't there. But that doesn't mean that it should stop the report, because Grace was not necessarily responsible for working on the content of the report. Grace and Lupeka shared the responsibilities, where she worked on the logistics, and Lupeka took responsibility for the report. And I'm saying that he has done his part.
Honourable members, can we take it in the spirit that the matter will be discussed with the supervisor of the concerned official? That's a couple of response from Honourable Board. Can we leave it at that?
Dr. Chairperson, I want to echo something. We must have a time, because really this has something to do with the government coffers and all that. So the report must be tabled, but we must have a time frame. When are we going to get that report? Because it's long overdue. It's about a month or two now. Thank you.
I think all those issues will be part of the meeting that we'll be having, because the person will also be called to account and also commit as to when the report is going to be ready.
Chair, let me just strengthen our hand if the honourable members can help with the time frame. Propose something that we minute.
I would request that before Friday you have a report, because it's long overdue.
Okay.
Thank you. There's nothing else. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you. We meet again tomorrow.